Newspeak isn't just in 1984 anymore. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to this edition of Principles and Policy. I'm host Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principle and Policy. And along with me today, as usual, is our co-host, my Vice Chairman, fellow analyst, and good friend, Chuck Michaels.
And yeah, it's a good day to do some analyzing since I've spent most of the day updating the website. Time to get some more stuff out there so I have more updating to do.
Yeah, that would be a good thing. And for those of you who are following along, I know that many of you who listen on WLRY hear us pretty in Saturdays at noon, but you can also follow or go back and listen again to a program that you may have heard while you were driving in your car by going to our website at principledpolicy.com, where we've posted up the archives of all the shows that you hear on this station in their entirety. So you're welcome to come and join us. There's no membership fee right now, at least, for you to come out and continue to listen and then enjoy these podcasts. But Chuck, today we've got one that I just laughed when I think about it. And, you know, we used the intro bump talking about Newspeak. And for those of you who are understand anything of that, we're talking about George Orwell's book 1984. Which looked at a very dystopian future. I think Orwell wrote that book in like the 1930s, and you know, obviously he was dialing ahead 50 years to see what kind of a dysfunction there was.
Barry, actually, he wrote it in 1948.
48, excuse me. Okay.
And of course, the title is a sort of an anagram of 1948, and he did it because he saw what Stalinism was doing to not just Russia but to the world. Having flirted with communism in his past, he was a socialist. He understood what Stalinism was all about and became an implacable opponent of Marxism from a kind of a peculiarly British perspective, and that is somehow that socialism is antithetical to communism, which of course we know to be completely false. But nonetheless, he proved in two books, Animal Farm and 1984, that he really understood how Leninism and Stalinism worked, because he was able to chronicle and satire that particular form of governance. He skewered it, really, with those two books. Animal Farm is a little more easy to read insofar as it's a little bit lighthearted. 1984, Barry, I remember, I've read it about six times, and the first time I read it, the images stuck with me, and all I can remember about it is that it was almost as if the images that I formed in my mind while I was reading were all in black and white, and everything was sort of a gray, concrete, cold, had that feel to it.
And I think that was what Orwell was trying to get at. That
yes, exactly.
There was no individuality. Everything was aligned with the machine, or what they called, and he called in his book, you know, with Big Brother. Big Brother told you what to do. Told you how to do it, and you basically followed everything that Big Brother told you to do.
There is a version of that movie that was made in the 50s with Edmund O'Brien, and actually it's one of the scariest movies I ever saw. Every once in a while it pops back up and like on Turner Classic or someplace, and I've been trying to see if I could find a copy of it, because I saw it once in the 1960s, and I'm telling you, it was a frightening movie. You know, no monsters or anything, but I can remember in my formative years being scared to death of this, he would be walking down the street and all of a sudden he'd have a light in his face.
Mm-hmm.
So bright that he couldn't see anything. And the police would be questioning, why are you out at night? And those kinds of things. So,
well,
a very good book.
Unlike a movie, which you can hit the pause button on to sit and discuss and digest what's going on in the movie, real life doesn't have a pause button. Chuck, what Orwell put in his book in 1948 and what they put on the screen in the 50s and 60s, we're seeing today in the year 2012, especially Newspeak, which I'll let you explain since you read the book a lot more times than I did. What was Newspeak that Orwell was talking about in the book?
Well, Newspeak was essentially, it was a form of doublespeak. In other words, you could say a phrase and it would mean whatever the speaker wanted it to mean. In other words, since the phrases were actually the words were being defined by the government, by Big Brother, then the words meant whatever Big Brother meant them to mean. And so you would hear phrases like two or three word phrases
mm-hmm.
that you could put together to create the word picture that Big Brother wanted you to hear. Now, the problem was you had to consult with Big Brother constantly to know exactly what the words meant. But in any case, Newspeak could mean one thing one week and something else the next week, depending on how Big Brother felt about it. So, for instance, I know what we're going to talk about today. I'm not going to break it. I'm going to let you break that since it's your idea. But what we're going to talk about is a perfect example of Newspeak.
Yes, because honestly, Chuck, it's only in a dystopian environment that you can have somebody who is a public figure, a leader of sorts, someone who you look to get understanding from, or some people do. And what came out of this person's mouth last week was absolutely right out of Orwell. When our own dear president, Barack Obama, in announcing his budget for the fiscal year 2013, was addressing a group at Northern Virginia Community College in Annandale, Virginia, he basically said that not raising taxes is a form of, get this, government spending. So in other words, to continue the tax cuts that were implemented during the Bush administration, he says is irresponsible because we're spending more on the tax cut. Chuck, I'm sure that for a number of people, they look at that and just say, oh, well, that's silly, and they go on. And for another number of it, they go, well, maybe that's that 1% that's sitting out there in the middle of freezing weather in tents acting like they're really making a difference in the world, that 99% out there who are saying, yeah, he's absolutely right. We need to get rid of these tax cuts. But we got to unpack this because this is Newspeak, Chuck. He's basically saying that if we don't raise taxes, if government or the Congress doesn't raise taxes like I want them to, then they're going to be responsible for all the spending that has to be found in other places other than out of your pocket, Mr. and Mrs. Taxpayer. And he basically said that we're scheduled to spend more than $1 trillion, that's trillion with a T, trillion dollars more on what was intended to be a temporary tax cut. Chuck, you know, you and I talked about this offline. I'll let you hit him with the punchline. What is he actually saying here?
Let's talk about this in terms of presupposition. What is the presupposition behind this statement? The presupposition is that all money really belongs to the government. All income belongs to the government, and the government allows you to keep some of it.
Well, I think there's even another presupposition behind that, Chuck. I think you and I chatted about this before, and that is that whatever the government has decided to spend money on, it's fixed, it's permanent, and therefore, if we give somebody a tax cut, we're taking away from that entitlement that everybody else is supposed to have, and so therefore, we got to raise the money somewhere else, because cutting programs or cutting the rate of spending in other areas is verboten. If we've decided we want to spend it, it's already spent, so therefore, you must get the tax money out of the populace in order to pay for it.
Well, yeah, and actually that kind of circles back around to my point.
Yeah,
the populace must pay. It actually is our money, and we're allowing you to keep it. There have been radio show hosts who have been joking about that for years, but the fact is, I don't think the president of the United States right now is joking. He's not kidding. He is serious. And what that presupposition does is expose that his ideology. And his ideology is Marxist, and that is that everything exists for the purposes of the state. Whenever the state decides needs to be spent on, therefore, you need to either produce enough income to pay for that, to pay the taxes on it, or you're going to have to go back and work harder, or we're going to have to cut some benefit of yours, or take something that you own and sell it in order that we can get the money to pay for this program that we've decided to fund with or without your consent.
This is the kind of mentality that we have currently in this country. And he basically says that when it doesn't raise taxes, the federal government actually spends. So as long as we can keep the tax money coming in, then the federal government really isn't spending, because they're just helping to redistribute what you've decided to spend through them. Now he's talking about that he wants to throw more money at clean energy. Now, we all understand that clean energy is probably not the worst idea in the world, except for the fact that you start the game by eliminating the best possible option on the table, which is nuclear energy.
nuclear energy.
So basically, you say that's off the table, but everything else, so we windmills and solar and electric cars and things like that, we're going to double down on that. You know, he's using, I love it how he's using gambler's terms, because honestly, this is what this guy is. He's a gambler.
Okay. For people who, we have a lot of Christians listen to the station, so let's explain what a double down is. When you lose in a double down game, let's say you're playing blackjack and you lose, the next time you bet double what you bet the first time in the hope that you hit 21 on this hand and you win all your money back plus. That's a double down bet.
Yeah. So in other words, throw it twice as much at a losing hand as what you threw before.
Exactly. In fact, in a rigged game, blackjack is probably the best odds, and you've got a 3-to-1 chance against winning. So essentially, the idea is that every time you lose, you keep doubling the bet. You're going to get your money back. You know what they call guys who bet that way, right? Bankrupt.
Bankrupt.
It doesn't work.
Well, it does. It only works if you can convince everybody that's not exactly what you're doing, that you're not being an irresponsible gambler, that you're actually, when you double down, that we call it investments in the Obama electionary lexicon. These are called investments. He said, you know, trimming the deficit's important. Investment is important as well. And the reason why he was at this Northern Virginia Community College was to unveil an $8 billion program to establish a partnership with community colleges and businesses in order to help stimulate the economy.
Let's talk about what some of the ridiculous things that were said in this article. For instance, essentially, the president said the federal government spends what it does when it does not raise taxes. Right now, quote unquote, right now, we're scheduled to spend more than $1 trillion more on what was intended to be a temporary tax cut for the wealthiest 2% of Americans. Well, first of all, that's not what the Bush tax cuts were about. It was the wealthiest 2% was not who benefited most from the tax cut. It was the middle class. And in fact, Barry, you and I both know the only people who ever bear the burden in a tax increase are the middle class.
That's right.
Because if it gets really bad, the rich pack up and leave.
Yes, they move their money offshore, or they move it into non-taxable instruments.
And exactly.
And of course, the very low income, they're exempted from taxes to begin with because of various federal statutes. So therefore, it's you and me, mom and pop, who get hit with any kind of a tax change that happens at the federal level.
Well, if you'll recall, there's a great example. Clinton got a tax passed. Remember, Congress passed this, so we're not just blaming President Clinton, to raise the tax, the luxury tax on yachts. So what happened? Well, a lot of marinas went out of business, and a lot of people moved their registrations for their yachts offshore.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So who got hurt? Well, the federal government lost all the revenue it was getting from all the marinas that closed. The federal government lost all the revenue it was getting from the boats that were registered here, who were willing to pay a reasonable tax. And the fact is, who got hurt was the average Joe who lost his job at the marina, or with a connected business who sold gasoline to the marina, or had a company that built parts, replacement parts for the yachts that went into keeping the boats repaired at the marina. There's all kinds of consequences that nobody thought about. And in fact, what happened to that tax? About 2 years later, it went the way of the Hindenburg. It burst into flames and crashed into the flames on the ground. And guess what? People changed their registrations back to the United States of America, and a lot of marinas got, you know, the benefit. So,
well, that's true. Here's another point of the new speak, because in this speech, he said that we need to reduce our dependence upon foreign oil. Now, you and I both agree with that, don't we, Jack?
Yeah, absolutely.
But here's how he decides that we can reduce our dependency on foreign oil: ending subsidies for oil companies and doubling down, there's that language again, on clean energy. Yeah. Now, honestly, I stopped and thought about that for a minute, and I thought, you know what? If you really want to reduce our dependence upon foreign oil, you didn't mention anything about drilling in Anwar. You didn't mention anything about allowing the shale exploration to continue. You didn't mention anything about allowing for drilling in the Gulf or along the continental shelf, which you've suspended licenses and permits for the last year and a half.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, we need to go into some of the other doublespeak in there, but we're out of time. Things go fast.
They do.
Yes, please join us tomorrow for another Principles and Policies.